This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today I have with me...
Mickey Tyler.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Now, last week we were talking about the museum and we got sidetracked into dental nursing, but there are some more things you could tell us about the organisation of the museum and the sorts of exhibits that it had.
Yes, well, the medical museum was administered by a charitable trust and is run by volunteers. Now, it is also chaired by Dr. John Burke from the hospital. He's a geriatrician in Starwood at the Palmerston North Hospital. It's an independent organisation until now, has worked in cooperation with the Palmerston North Hospital, but they no longer were able to support us on site. So although we still have a presence, as we have said in our earlier report, that we have cabinets throughout the hospital where people can view some of our items, but we also have a lot of our very precious stuff in storage, which is unfortunate, but there are times when we're going to be able to use that, some of our exhibits, for pop-ups or for displays. We've already had some requests to have a display next year in March for Local History Week, and also do a presentation at the library, so all of this keeps the presence going for us and for people to understand that we do this. There's just so much history there. There's a lot of, up in the hospital we had a lot of, in the museum we had a lot of military memorabilia, and one of the original, or earlier I should say, surgeons at the hospital was a Dr. A.A. Martin. And you may know that, or you probably have realised that around Palmerston North there are a lot of red poppy signs.
Yes, on that's right. And there's
street
the sappers
signs
and the engineers museum at the army base, and they've been very active in supporting.
Yes, well, there's a Martin Street which runs between Grey Street and Broadway, and that was named after A.A. Martin. He was Arthur Anderson Martin, and he was a...
Martin.
And he was a surgeon. He was a very colourful man, and he also wrote a book, A Surgeon in Khaki. And he went and did his medical training in Scotland, and then he worked for the British Ambulance Corps, I think I'm right. And he worked there for some time, and then he came back to New Zealand. But however, he went back over there to a conference at the university where he had done his qualification, and while he was there, World War One broke out, and he volunteered at that stage for that Army Corps, but the Ambulance Corps, but he had burnout, and he came home after some time and worked at the Palmerston North Hospital as a surgeon there. He was also very interested in radiation in those early days and started doing some research with that. But however, he got very interested here with his research, but he then got itchy feet about going back. So he went back to France, and at the Somme he actually was killed at a very young age, 37 I think he was, retrieving a wounded soldier from the field. But he was a very colourful character. But that's only one of the...
So was that... There was a talk that you gave recently in a seminar series, and one of the things was a military medical case. Was that his?
No. But okay. we did have some instruments from a German hospital that were retrieved, and which was very interesting. A lot of military memorabilia up there, and we also had, well, some of the nurses from the Palmerston North Hospital actually served overseas in the wars, and were decorated. Some of them were decorated. We hear a lot about the soldiers, but we never hear much about the nurses. But there's quite a bit of literature on the nursing.
They were covered in the museum at Waiuru. They had some.
Oh right, yes. Yeah. No, and there were some nurses, even the ones who'd worked in Palmerston North Hospital, who died on the Marquette, a boat that was torpedoed.
Yes.
And they were never meant to be on it, but that was a big mix up there somehow, and they were lost. The nursing staff up there were amazing, and I'd like to tell you about the first matron of the Palmerston North Hospital, Ellen Doherty. She was there quite early on, and she was, as I say, the first matron, but she served in that position for 15 years, between 1893 and 1908. And she was actually the first state-registered nurse in New Zealand, and the literature says, and in the world, because the New Zealand nurses lobbied for registration at that time. And... she was, there's some very interesting stories about her. I think she was a typical matron and didn't stand any nonsense.
Okay, so the equivalent of a sergeant major.
Yeah, something like that. We even had them in the school dental service, actually. The dental nurse inspector, they were called, and they used to come round to the clinics, and here I go, school dental service again. But they were very much like the matrons at the hospital, you know. Thou shalt do this way, sort of thing. But
I was in a Rotary Club where there's a very nice woman, actually, but she'd been a hospital surgery head nurse, something like that. But her ideas of we need volunteers for things, it's you're volunteering, you're
yes. But you know, the school dental service training, which started in the early 20s, was started by a Colonel Hunter, and it was along military lines. We had to stand to attention with our hands behind our back when we were spoken to. And it didn't do us any harm, you know.
No.
Not at all. But we accepted it in those days, you see.
Yes. Yeah,
wouldn't be acceptable now.
Yeah.
No. So, however, getting back to the hospital, yes, it was... we had some very, very interesting exhibits there. We had a telegram from the Boer War. We had a Maori kit from the Maori Wars, medical kit. And lots of memorabilia that had been picked up overseas by some of the soldiers and brought home. But
you say memorabilia, is this loot?
Yeah, loot. I'll tell you what we did have. We had gas masks, which were, and you may remember this, in England gas masks were distributed to everybody Second World War.
I don't remember. I'm after that, but yes.
We had a baby one.
Yes. Yeah.
That they had them for babies and for little children, and for civilians and for army people, and they had to practice every day with them on. But they were never used because it wasn't a gas warfare.
Yes, actually, that is something notable. Given all those horrors of the Second World War, they did at least know that around the world they knew not to do something that had been so terrible in the First World War.
That's true, yes.
Yeah.
But, it's we nearly always get a story about someone who went to the war and somebody this and somebody that. And this is what happens in museums.
Yes.
Lots of stories surface because I remember when, you know. I'll tell you another very interesting thing we've got up there. We've got quite a few medical kits that were off ships that came to New Zealand early on. And
when you say early on?
We are 18th century, virtually.
1800s, yeah?
Okay. Yeah, 1800s. Yes. they are just amazing. Some of them had nearly 100 bottles in them, just with small amount of little medication in each one. And we had to pack those all up when we vacated.
Yeah. So were there a lot of good medicines in the 1800s, or these were just things that they hoped? I remember seeing bottles of, you know, arsenic and radiation and so on, radioactive material that's supposed to be really good for you.
I know. Well... Yeah. Yes, I'm not sure, but we had a mock pharmacy set up in the museum as well, with a pharmacist there who was rather a stern-looking man, model, of course. But we had some amazing potions and bottles and things from way back in there. And, I mean, people took something that was recommended to them, whether it fixed them or not.
Yeah. Well, there's all the time these different elixirs. You see the newspaper adverts from that time. This can cure a whole range of things.
But you see, there weren't the nasties about like we have now, were there so much?
What do you mean the nasties?
Well, the different bacteria and infections that we get now that you never heard of.
Probably that's because they died of simpler things. With antibiotics, I think the first case where they found antibiotics was effective, I think it was a London policeman who'd been pruning the roses and pricked by a rose and got an infection. And so they tried, was it penicillin that they tried?
Penicillin was the first antibiotic we had.
Yeah, and they found, and he was recovering very well, but they only had a very small quantity because they didn't know how to, and there wasn't enough. So when they ran out, then he died. But that's how they found out that it was effective. But the idea that you could die from a prick on your hand from pruning roses, you know, which was the situation.
Yes.
So you had the things from ships, some of the medical...
We did. Yes, we had... there was pretty well covered. I'll tell you another interesting thing that we had, which I really enjoyed furnishing, if you like. We had a baby trolley, and I bought some from Kmart. I bought some little babies and dressed them up put them on this trolley. Now, these were nursing trolleys that we used in the maternity wards of hospitals. Earlier on, before the mothers were allowed to have the babies in their rooms.
So, nursing trolleys.
Yes. Well, the nursing trolley was like a trolley with six compartments on the top. I think they varied from six to four or whatever size hospital they were in. Six along the top and six along the bottom, just like carry cots now, but they were. This was all in wood. So there were six on the top and six on the bottom, and the babies were all kept in the nurseries, and they were allowed to be taken, wheeled to the parents, to the mothers, at feeding time only. They were not allowed to be in the room with the mother and stay there.
And how long were the baby and mother in hospital before going home?
That I can't tell you.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm sorry, no. But anyway, we have had a lot of laughs about that because rumour had it that the babies did get mixed up. And the lady who gave it to me had used one of these in the Horowhenua Hospital, actually, and she said to me, and they did.
Yes.
Well, a friend of mine told me that she had a baby born with red hair. And the baby that was brought to her had black hair.
Yes.
And she said, "This is not my baby." oh, yeah, oops.
Yeah.
So, you know, things like that happen. I mean, now the mother would never allow the baby to be taken away from her.
Yes, yeah. So, well, also they put a band on the baby's ankle straight away.
They do. And I looked at this trolley to see if there was any indication of where a name could have been put. And I couldn't see it, but I think they did at some stage have some beads or something that they put around their little wrists. Yes.
Yeah. So now with all the DNA testing, all sorts
absolutely,
of things.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. But no.
So okay. So do you recall then? Given that they had the nursing trolleys, were most babies born in hospital then?
Oh yes.
I remember in England there were nursing homes. So if you're having a baby, you go to a nursing...
Maternity home.
Maternity home, yeah.
Yes, we did have maternity homes here. There was a big one here just on the corner of Ferguson and Ruhini Street.
Oh, okay.
And that was before my time. But yes, definitely. Definitely. But there were maternity wards then in the hospitals.
Oh, okay, yes. Which they have now as well, don't they? But there wouldn't have been caesareans in the early days, or not so many, would they? Apparently it's relatively common now.
No, because they had instruments that they used rather than...
Ah, okay.
Yes.
They induced them with instruments?
They did, because I had them used on me, yes.
Oh, wow.
And so
did they know, you'd be in labour when they used it, or they bring it on with the instruments?
Yes, they... Well, I'll tell you a funny story because Marilyn and I were cleaning out one of the cabinets in the hospital and there were some maternity forceps there or birth forceps in there that they had. And anyway, along came two doctors and they stopped to have a look and one said, oh, laughed and said, I used to use those. Yeah. And I said, yes, and I had them used on me. Yeah.
Was that just to help the baby come out, whereas now they'd allow it?
They would breech babies and they couldn't be born naturally.
Okay. Yeah.
Now it would be caesarean. No, you know, they would never consider using them now. Well, they haven't been used for years now.
Okay, yeah.
But mine was a country hospital.
Is that because caesareans are safer now?
Oh,
with
yes,
all the
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Can I ask, what was it like? You were just relieved to have the baby born, or
no? I was in the Hunterville Cottage Hospital and I remember the matron standing at the door, standing at the window, looking out and saying, "More pushing, less moaning." But however, the doctor had been called. Obviously, he came in and. The last thing I remember him saying was, put her out. So I was I didn't know anything about it. But it was common. I won't say relatively common, but it was, you know, quite often you heard, oh, yes, I had an instrument birth. Yeah.
So they talk about instrument births. So the natural birth ideas came in much later, and I've heard mixed stories about medicalization of childbirth. Is that
Well, look, I my two children I only had 14 months between them, and circumstantially, because we were moving from Hunterville up to Gisborne at the time when my second child was to be born and due to be born, and I went to Nelson to my parents, and I had my second child down there. And with my first one, because I had instruments and stitches and things, I wasn't allowed to put my feet to the floor for 10 days.
Wow.
I went to Nelson and had my daughter, and I got up and had a shower.
Uh-huh.
You know, so
with instruments as well? Or?
No.
Oh,
things progressed very quickly, though, you know, it's like any operation now. Yeah. I mean, I've had a hip replacement, and they get you up in the afternoon.
That's right.
Come on, up you get.
I found that in health conferences, they were saying, you know, after operation, they used to think young person's had an operation, right, exercise, and old person's had an operation. They said, now you rest. And they realised actually it took them much longer to recover, and they didn't recover as well. Now they just say, you've got to start, you know, use your muscles get up, do things, and they'd recover much better.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's staggering, so but it's the same with anything, isn't it? You know, it's just progress.
Yes. Yeah.
Pardon me, and
Hopefully going forward rather than going down a dead end.
Absolutely, But and techniques, equipment, everything now is so different. But we used to laugh up at the museum looking with John at his little theatre there, mock theatre, and we'd say he would look around occasionally, and we'd look at something new, or he'd have a magazine or something, and he'd say to me, all this new stuff, he said, it'll be all extinct in a few years' time. He said, it'll all be different.
Just changing, well, a lot of things are changing very fast at the moment. Because all the new technology, I suppose, is making the difference, all the new monitors. And,
That's right. And this this keyhole surgery they do and things now is amazing, isn't it? You know, they don't have to cut you open so often.
Give you much faster recovery times because there's much less damage. And they're also, I think, probably diagnosing things much earlier so they can intervene before things have got so serious.
Well, they hope so, but with the waiting lists now...
Oh, that's true. But this is one of the problems. The more you can do... At one stage, they could just say, sorry, there's nothing more we can do, because there was nothing that they knew about. Now, there's all these things they can do, but they all cost. So how much are you actually going to do?
Well, it's like teeth, isn't it? You know, implants. Who would have ever thought you could have a tooth implant? I mean, you can have it, but you pay for it too.
Yes.
It's like anything else, isn't it? Prices have just escalated so much. But no, but, you know, the aim, the real aim of the medical museum was to preserve the history of a lot of these things.
Important.
Because a lot of it would just... And we found this when we had to pack up and put it into storage. You know, will we keep this or won't we? But we had a lot of duplication, which happens in museums. Mm. So we were able to fill it out quite a bit. But sadly, we're going to have to... fill it out a little bit more because we can't continue to afford to pay for storage. Yes.
Now, I was going to ask you, you know, you had a building before and now things are in storage, but what did the museum do for funding?
Gold coin donation. But the hospital, you see, paid for our power that we used. We were only open... we weren't open every day or anything like that, so infrequently... We had set days, but this is how we feel now, that if we were able, or if the council was able to support us in somewhere, in a building in town somewhere, we would have to up our game, and we would have to we would have to open every day, we would have to have more volunteers, and we would have to charge.
Yes,
because it's... We wouldn't have enough money to sustain paying a rent, or a rental.
And there's issues, I suppose, with some museum exhibits. I suppose how to conserve them and so forth.
Yes.
Do you need controlled conditions for much of that?
Yes. We didn't have any of that up there, but we were very careful. We're very particular about heating.
Yes.
You know, it was quite cool in there, but it wasn't a cold building, but you know, we were very careful not to have heaters on for long.
Because it was all amateurs running the museum.
Just volunteers.
The expertise for that? You got the exhibits set up and so on? That was just
yourselves
how to do it.
David Warnock himself was he was incredibly good and knowledgeable all of that area.
Yeah.
And we had two other doctors on our trust, and they would all they all contributed very extremely well, yes.
I know, yes, because I saw in the talk that you gave, there was John described a lot of the different anaesthetic equipment over the years. So, you know, you almost need a description to understand what they were and how they changed. Did you have things written up in descriptions for the different pieces?
I'm not sure. I don't know. I can't really answer that. But we did have anything that was donated, we always asked for a history of it. Yeah, so that we could refer to that.
That's right, the provenance, I think, that's, the museum talks about.
Yes, that's right, yes. Mm. We had Margaret Taylor. She was on our trust, and she was very, very good. She was English, and she had studied in art history and things, and she was very particular about how you didn't do things, you know.
Okay.
And things were itemised very well when they were delivered. But sometimes, and this happens in museums too, sometimes we would arrive over or go over to our storage shed to have a look for something, and there would be new things popped in there. People used to just deposit them in there from the hospital. We didn't know who they'd come from or what they were, but I was always particular about asking for give us some background to where it came from, what it is, and who's donated it, sort of thing.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.